Of course, you know, if you look, I had a great time the last couple of days going back, because, you know, all of our messages are on the internet, and you can go back and you can look at the series that we've done and some of the, you can get the slides and the notes and stuff like that. And so it's amazing all the things that we covered. But what was even more amazing to me is how much of it I have forgotten already. And we covered a lot of really good ground. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun to go back over some of the highlights of this last year. There's a lot of different ways that you can, you know, look back at the year. And one of the funnest ways to do that, I think, is to just, we'll start by looking at some of the numbers involved. So how long were you subject on the average Sunday to having to sit in the chair and listen to us? You take a minute and ask somebody near you, what do you think? Give an educated guess. Do I hear 30 minutes? Why are you? People are chuckling. Why? You think it was longer than that? The average message length this year, believe it or not, was 44 minutes and 4 seconds. And you can go back, and if you don't believe me, you can look online, and this is right off the official record. Now, we do 3 messages, and so sometimes, you know, one is a little bit longer or shorter than the other one, but the official record, the one that God looks at, is the one that's on the website. So the longest message, anybody have a gander at which of us is long-winded? Can't be Dan. June 6th, Dan. 62 minutes and 48 seconds. Dan did point out to me that he reckons that there was one that I went a little longer, but I told him, hey, I looked at the official record, and that one was 59 minutes on the one that went on the web. Sorry, Dan. But I gotta cut Dan some slack, because if you look at the title of what he had to cover that day, How to Stay Pure in a Sex-Saturated World. I mean, you can spend a long time talking about that stuff, so I got to cut him some slack. How about the shortest message? Who's the brevity least talking person? Yeah, it's John. John, September 5th, this is not excluding Christmas Eve and special services that we did, 35 minutes and 10 seconds. We had 220 kids here for Vacation Bible School. I don't think that counts all of the mazillion staff that we had helping out. That was pretty awesome. And you know what? We even added one naturalized citizen to our staff this year. I think, Rolf, was it 18 years that you were in process? Not that anyone's counting, 21. Let's hear it for the efficiency of the federal government. Now, Raphael, who is our naturalized citizen as of Friday 2 weeks ago, I got a picture that I took of, I don't know what card that was, your old driver's license or whatever. I got this great picture of him. And, you know, you see Rolf up here, and he looks like a meek, mild, just kind, unassuming guy. Well, I saw a picture of Rolf that kind of scared me. He looks a little bit more like a gangster back in the day than he does today. Thanks for cleaning it up, Rolf. Gives our church a nice look on Sundays. All right, well, you know what? We started it all off. The first Sunday of this last year was the 3rd, and John did a message called You Are Here, like X, this is where you find yourself. And John called upon one of the great theologians of our time who, you know, asks a great question. Is there any meaning or purpose to this thing we call life? And do we have any kind of, you know, does our life, is there any distinction? Do we have a destiny, a purpose in being here? And so he called on Forrest Gump to help answer that question. In fact, Forrest is the one who asks the question so well. You know, John pointed out, and I never thought of this, but, you know, Forrest is we kind of laugh about him, but what a neat guy. He loves people, and he takes them just the way they are. And, you know, he makes do with life, whatever may come of it. And he always tries to keep his word. An outstanding guy in so many ways. And he does ask this, he asks a really profound question in the movie that John played this movie clip for us. And he's standing at the grave of his wife who has died at a very young age of 35. And her life has been a series of a lot of really poor decisions. And so he's wondering about life, and this is what he says.
I don't know if Mama was right or if it's Lieutenant Dan. I don't know if we each have a destiny. Or if we're all just floating around accidental-like on a breeze.
Is life, do we have a destiny, or is life just like floating along on a breeze? And this was really what this question came from, is the series that we were wrapping up that really was the whole year of 2008 that we looked at, which was a series called It All Belongs to God. And John was pointing out that if you look back, and we spent a year talking about this, that John hates that word random. And he was talking with Corbin, our youth pastor, about how people go, oh, well, that's so random. And John hates that because, you know, if you are a student of history, especially God's history, and seeing how from creation through the fall and all of humanity, God has been working and weaving, and he's got an end in mind, and God is going somewhere. And so John pointed out to us that God's story is anything but random. You can see God's hand intricately woven through all of the events of human history. And along with that, one of the things that the scripture teaches us so well, and if you got your bulletin here, there's some notes in there you can follow. And I did print out a bunch of these verses that John gave us about this. But one of the things the scripture tells us is that you were made in the image of God. And each of you has a unique set of gifts and talents and abilities. And it's not random that you are where you are and that you are in the circle of people's influence that you are. God's got a purpose and a plan and a desire for you to use all that he has given you to make a difference in the world, to live a full life as a human and to live a life that honors and gives him the glory that he deserves. So that was all in the course of this study that we did, kind of wrapping it up, called It All Belongs to God. One of the big events right away that happened in January, in fact, it was on Tuesday the 12th, was the earthquake in Haiti. And one of the things that, you know, you couldn't watch those pictures and not be affected and see the pain and the turmoil in the lives of the people there and not have a heart that went out to them and want to make a difference. And it was a reminder of that very thing that we had been talking about, how it all belongs to God and how even in the midst of the brokenness, God's desire is for us, you know, as a human race, we enter into this and we're supposed to love and encourage and help and support each other, even through the brokenness that we find in life. And so one of the things that was really encouraging to me was to come on Sunday morning and find out that we had a missionary that we support that was on the ground, and that we had a missions organization that had two missionaries working in Haiti at that very moment. And one of the things that this reminds me of is, you know, you come to church and sometimes we forget the impact of us getting together as a group of people endeavoring to take seriously what it means to make God and make Jesus' fame known around the world and to make a difference for God, not just here in South Lake Tahoe, but around the world. And so one of the things that's so encouraging to me is we get together on Sundays and we pass a basket, and some of that money goes to pay for electricity in the building in here and provide sound and stuff like that that we enjoy. But, you know, we support, I think, 33 different missionaries and missions organizations. And who wouldn't want, when you saw those pictures, to go and help and do everything you can to make a difference in the lives of people that are going through a disaster? And see, that's one of the cool things about this place as a church and as a family is you really do contribute all around the world in the name of Jesus, people that are not only helping other people come to know who Jesus is, but going and making a real physical, substantial difference, being the hands and feet that you and I would love to be in these kinds of situations in people's lives. And that's one of the beautiful things that I was reminded of this last year. Another event that kind of shaped our thinking and, you know, I think says a lot about the world that we live in today was on August 4th, 2010, a judge in Northern California, Vaughn Walker, overturned the Proposition 8. And if you remember Proposition 8, they spent $84 million, the pro and against, in the state of California. How are we going to define marriage? Is it going to be strictly between a man and a woman, or are we going to open it up and anybody who loves each other who wants to enter into that union and will redefine what it means? And the voters had their vote, and they voted that it should be just between a man and a woman. And Judge Vaughn Walker came along and said that that was not constitutional and overturned it. And the reason I think that's significant is because it really illustrates so well one of the greatest struggles that we have in the world where we live today, and that is the great confusion over sex and sexuality and the place and importance of the family. And see, here's the thing. Our culture has all these sort of value systems and thoughts and philosophies about sex and sexuality and about the value of the traditional nuclear family. And in many regards, those values that the culture that we live in today are really in direct opposition to what the scriptures teach us about sex and sexuality and the importance of the nuclear family. And so we spent some time, we thought it was important to talk about this. So we did a series called Thinking Clearly About Sex and Sexuality. And also we spent some time in our study in 1 Peter talking about the family and the arrangement of the family and why God has put the order to it that he has. As we went through that, one of the, you know, looking back, there's so many neat things I could draw on going back and looking at the notes and the messages, but a couple of the highlights. The first one is, I love what Dan said in that series, in the second message there, talking about how do you stay pure in a sex-saturated world. And one of the first keys for us, no matter how much you love God, no matter how much time you spend in the Scripture, even if you don't have a TV in your house, man, billboards, magazines, interaction with other people, you cannot avoid the pictures and the images of the way, the perverted way that so often our culture talks about and thinks about sex. And it's so important to guard your mind and capture every thought and make it obedient to Christ. And Dan did a great job talking and laying out some of the verses just to help arm yourself and think about what it means to be ready. If we're going to be out there and living in the world, and that's what God's expectation is, you're not going to be able to avoid some of this stuff. But it is important that you're ready to take, capture, and make obedient all of those things that do have an impact on the way you think, see, and influence the way you look at other people and think about issues like sex and sexuality. And then in the very first message in that series, Dan laid out something else that is so critical if we're going to live in a world and help make a difference and help the next generation of people understand God's perspective on sex and sexuality, and that is to learn to talk to your kids. And, you know, Dan's been so frank talking about that struggle just even in his own life with his boys. And I'm finding that out too myself. But, you know, here's the thing. As uncomfortable as it may be, if you don't, as a mom or a dad, learn to tackle and talk about these things in a healthy, holistic way, your kids are going to hear about it. They are going to learn about it. I homeschool my boys. And one of the main reasons is because, you know, I don't want my kids at, you know, in the second grade to be confronted with some of this stuff that I know they will, and they will have no context for which to put it in, and they're really not capable yet of understanding all of this. And that's just the reality of being in public school, and that's one of the key reasons why we've decided to homeschool our kids, besides the fact that my wife is an amazing teacher. But not everybody has that option. And it's so key. And even in that attempt to, you know, like, try and expose my kids and talk to them about that at a proper time, we live in a neighborhood with lots of other kids. And some of the kids there go to public school, some of them are homeschooled, and some of them go to a private school. And you know what? They come home, and they're still hearing and talking and wondering about that stuff. There's no way to live in the world today and not be exposed to it, no matter how careful you are, short of locking your kids up. And nobody wants to do that. You have to learn to take the initiative to talk about these things with your kids and figure out the proper ways and times and places. It's incumbent upon us to help shape and mold. This is God's greatest calling for us as adults and parents, is to be able to pass on, shape, mold, and help our kids understand what it looks like to honor God and see things from His perspective, which is such a challenge in the world we live in today. The thing that I talked about, you know, I got a lot of easy things this year. I had to talk about marriage and men and women's relationships and women submitting to their husbands, a passage in Peter. I got to talk about homosexuality. I got to talk about tithing. I got all the easy stuff this year. But in that series, I did get to talk about the issue of homosexuality, which was a major blessing for me to be able to do. It really was. And one of the things that I came to the conclusion, and it really doesn't have to do primarily with homosexuality, but it has to do with any of our urges or desires or passions. And that is, whenever we find that what we want to do may be in opposition to God, even if it's really difficult, you always have the opportunity to be able to say no to your passions or your inclinations and choose by your will, by getting into accountability, by finding other people that will support and encourage you to take hold of God's desire for your life, the way He created for us to live, and live that out with passion in your life. You know, I talk to, you know, college students and high schoolers for most of my life in ministry. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had, you know, not just guys, but girls too, talk about, well, why do we have to wait to get married to have sex? It's, if it's a gift from God, it's a good thing, and you can enjoy it. Why do we have to wait for that stuff? And I, you know, you walk through and help them explain the context for which God gave us to enjoy it. But here's the thing. Ultimately, no matter how strong your passions and your urges are, no matter what all your friends are doing, we always have that choice, don't we? We're never a victim. We always have the opportunity to reshape and adopt our lives to live a life that honors God. I think that one of the neatest things that we did this year is we did this short series at the beginning of the year, right on the tail of It All Belongs to God. So we walked through and said, if all of history belongs to God and He is going somewhere and He asks us to enter into that story, and what are His expectations for how we ought to govern or live our lives? So we went through six things. We talked about authenticity and humility and forgiveness, compatibility, credibility, and judging. We talked about some really neat things. But in the course of that series, I had what I think probably was the most profound Sunday I've ever experienced in my life in church. And it was the Sunday I shared the pulpit up here with Rex. And I got to kind of talk about the nuts and bolts about forgiveness and about the biblical perspective on why forgiveness is important. And then Rex came out and talked about his life experience with having to forgive. And if you were not here for that Sunday, you can go back online and listen. And for anybody that has ever said, I can't forgive, and there are a lot of people that will say that because they've been through horrible, traumatic experiences. No doubt about it. I really encourage you to go back and listen to what Rex has to say. And you know, if you live here in town and you want to talk more about what that looks like, you know, I think one of the neatest weeks in Rex's life was having the opportunity to get together with a ton of people that wanted to talk to him about his experience and what forgiveness looks like. And that's one of the great resources we have in having Rex here. So if you want to do that, you want to listen and go back and, you know, hear about Rex's experience through all of this stuff, that's a great resource and opportunity. April 20th, 2010, another one of the major stories of the year was the Deepwater Horizon, you know, the collapse of the well out in the Gulf of Mexico. And one of the kind of sad, forgotten stories in the midst of the environmental damage that happened there is, I think it was 16 people that were working and living on the platform died. That experience, you know, seeing those pictures, we get a reminder about, we have some amazing abilities via our technology to make a mark on this world, don't we? And we also see what happens sometimes when those technologies go awry, and the environmental disaster that happened after that. And it reminds me, one of the first things we learn in the Bible is God calls us to cultivate and create, to subdue and sustain this environment, this place that He has made. And it's a great challenge to do that well and effectively, and we can see how easily things go awry when we're not good stewards of what God gave us. But along with that, you know, one of the other things I came to realize via watching this is as fragile and dynamic as our ecosystem is, and it's hard to undo some of this stuff, it's also a pretty vibrant place, isn't it? And it's amazing how you go back, and I was watching the show about life in the marshes and how quickly, in many places, places they thought would not recover for decades, are thriving again. It's incredible, this place that God has made and created. But it brings to mind that word that we think about that is so popular in culture today when we look at the environment, and that is the word stewardship. And based on that word, we decided we'd do a series about one of the hardest things to be a good steward of, and that is our finances. But it's no less a reality, and probably for most of you, like it has been for me, this last year has probably been one of the greatest challenges financially for you in your life. It has been for us as a church. So we decided, let's tackle and talk about, you know, what it looks like to be a good steward of the resource that our finances and our money is. We did 3 weeks on that, and then we did an extended course outside of church with that. And so the first one, John did a message on the basics of biblical finances, and then Dan did a series a message called What Not to Do with Your Money, and I came up and talked about generosity or giving as a way of life. One of the fun things going through this series was we were kind of guided through it by Dave Ramsey and watched some of his clips, and he had a lot of clips that made us laugh and some that made us cry, but my favorite one was the one where he's talking about debt and how in America, how the opportunity to get in debt, it's so easy. And debt is like a cheetah hunting down its prey. And debt will put you in bondage and it can kill you. And so we all need, and was as debt is chasing us, we need to figure out how to survive and get away. And he played this clip for us. Oh, wouldn't it be nice to be able to be rescued that easily? But we saw a lot of really neat and hilarious clips that Ramsey put together about the danger of debt and what it looks like to be good stewards of what God gave us. And, you know, I think one of the most practical, simple things that we've all heard and remember, John reminded us, there it is. John reminded us of the passage in Matthew that there's several verses in here that talk about money. It says, no one can serve two masters. Either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't serve both money and God. And so we spent a lot of time talking about what a challenge that is in the world that we live. And one of the Dan, when he did his series, one of the things that Dan shared that, and this is what we all love about Dan. Dan makes sometimes the difficult to understand. He can bring it home and make things so practical. And one of the, I think, the things that stuck out most to me is Dan taught about what not to do with your money is he reminded us of the reality of money is a great test. It helps reveal what we really want and desire in life. It exposes what our real values are. His contention was, if I can look at your checkbook, your bank statement, and see where you're spending your money, I can tell you real quickly what's really important to you. And man, that got to my heart. You know, but that is really true, isn't it? We didn't just talk about money and we didn't just talk about, you know, sex and sexuality, but we did another Thinking Clearly series, and this was all about life change. And one of the realities that we talked about is anybody that's serious about following Jesus, you come to find out as you examine you know, how Jesus embodies all that it means to be God. One of the things we find out is very oftentimes what God values is sometimes different from what we value. So how do I adjust my life and my priorities to become more in line with the heart of God? And so we talked all about how do you make serious changes in your life. In the midst of that, when I was in Bible college, I took a bunch of classes on counseling. And, you know, they teach you some really good handy techniques about what it means to be a good listener, which is a challenge for me because I can't hear anything good. But how to listen well, how to have empathy for people, how to frame things in a positive manner when you talk about changing people's lives. But Dan showed us a clip from the Newhart Show in a counseling session that is not one of the tactics that they taught us and probably one of the ones that's best to avoid when you're doing counseling with a loved one in your own life.
All right, well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. We find most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, you're there.
Stop it!
I'm sorry?
Stop it!
Stop it?
Yes, S-T-O-P, new word, I-T.
So, what are you saying?
You know, it's funny. I say two simple words, and I cannot tell you the amount of people who say exactly the same thing you're saying. I mean, this, you know, this is not Yiddish, Catherine. This is English. Stop it.
So, I should just stop it.
There you go.
What, you know, illustrates real well, you know, one of the things I have often wanted to do in counseling sessions, yet rarely have tried it, only under rare occasions. But here was the connection to the series, and it was really brilliant insight that Dan had. And when he did this, he was talking about how, as tempting as it is when we see someone doing behavior that's destructive, either to their own life or the people around them, as tempting as it is just to yell at them, he contrasted how God works with us in the context of when we're making a mess of our lives or the lives of people around us. And, you know, one of the things that God does, and we understand this from reading his story, is how God lays out so well for us the reality of the result of the choices and consequences that we make. He helps you understand way ahead of time what's going to happen. If you choose to do this, this is what's going to happen. And you know what that's really motivated out of? A patience that God has for us. And see, here is really the crux and the key of this whole thing, because I'm sure God does from time to time just want to yell at us, stop it. But Dan pointed out something so well. What God does is he doesn't yell at us just to stop destructive behaviors in our lives that's hurting ourselves and other people. What he does is he calls us to embrace his teachings and commandments. He takes the positive spin and says it's not enough just to stop the negative behavior, but to embrace what it really looks like to live holistically the way I designed you to live. Not just stop whatever negative things that you're doing. And I love how Dan walked through what that looks like as God is always calling us to embrace more of who he is and the way he designed for us to live. Another thing that Dan pointed out in that same message is he talked about how important it is to be honest and open and have confession be a regular part of your life if you really want to experience life change. And the key to this is something we talk about all the time from up front, and that is learning to be humble. Learning to be humble. Because you can't really be honest about who you are, your weaknesses and your failings and your struggles, unless you're willing to be humble. And you certainly aren't going to experience change if you're not willing to see your weaknesses, confess them, and desire to embrace change in your life as a result of that. Change is a big word. And in fact, there's a really popular person who recently coined a phrase, hope and change. In fact, ran a whole campaign on it. And so we borrowed President Obama's hope and change theme and talked about how important it is that real change does happen in our life, but you got to be careful because change happens as a result of what we desire, what our deepest hopes are. And out of those hopes, they help shape our life and our choices that we make. Drawing on that illustration, I played a video that I just happened to have as we were working through the series that I took with my iPhone in my kitchen in the corner of the house that we moved into. There's a Lazy Susan, and we didn't have a childproof latch on the door, and so my 1 year old and something month Avila crawled in there, and this is the video that we played.
Where's Avila?
Avila.
Where's Avila?
There she is.
Hi, what you doing in there? Oh, you're trying to get the candy? Is that what you're doing?
What are you doing in here? Hey, what are you doing?
You gonna get out now?
Do you have enough ride? How was the ride, Avila?
I'm trying to get the candy, Daddy. Was that fun?
Yeah, I talked about how this, I thought this illustrated so well that reality that when we hope, we set our desires on something, how we're willing to contort and, you know, morph ourselves into all sorts of positions, financially and otherwise, to get what we want, the object of our hope. And in that video, you can see, she, when we first walked in there, we could hear her, but the door was barely open. It's dark in there. Why would a little kid crawl into a dark space like that? Well, she wanted what? She's holding on to the candy jar. And she's reluctant to get out, isn't she? Even after we spun her around in there and we think it's funny, she just wants to get that candy out of there, man. And even after she comes out, she's still looking at Mama. Oh, good. Candy. And I think that represents so well the reality of why it's important to think about where you place your hope. Because where your hope exists, it will change and affect the choices you make in your life. And ultimately, you know, the book of Hebrews does such a good job expressing why our ultimate hope ought to exist. The best place and most secure place to put your hope and your desires is in the person of Jesus Christ and the work that He's done for us and the future that we have via the relationship with God, via what Christ has done for us. And the whole book of Hebrews is all about that. We spent a couple of weeks looking at some of those verses in there. Well, if it wasn't enough that we talked about sex and sexuality, we spent some time talking about money, all of these taboo things, we decided we'd just go for the gusto and talk about politics also, right? Why not just throw God and government in there? And I think that we had a great time talking and thinking about the history of this country and the privilege that it is for us to live in America today, both the good, the bad, the ugly of it. But here was the ultimate thing, and this, we did 5 weeks on this, and Dan spoke right in the middle, and probably what is ultimately one of the most important truths that we know that governs our lives as believers, and that is that there's a reality that we are a citizen of two worlds, and we have a response. It's a huge privilege to be an American, and it's the ultimate privilege to be called a child of God. And we are citizenship, ultimately, Paul tells us, is in heaven. And our ultimate allegiance, obviously, ultimately belongs to God. But He doesn't expect us to forsake this world, does He? He expects us to enter into and influence and impact this world at the deepest levels through all of relationships and every opportunity and avenue that He gives us to exercise our voice. And part of the great privilege and responsibility we have in America is to be a part of the system that shapes not only, you know, our society and our culture, but also our government and what that looks like for us to do. And what a great challenge that is for us. And that was a fun series to look through. One of the things that's true also about being a part of this church is what makes our church, it's not this, what happens in here on Sundays. This is an important part of this church, but it's about a whole lot more than just what happens in here on Sunday morning, isn't it? And, you know, during the week, you know, there's men's ministry stuff and women's ministry stuff and youth ministry stuff, college ministry stuff, all these different things going on here during the week that help make this church this amazing place that it is. And, you know, one of the funnest things that we get to experience as a whole church is seeing what Lori does with her kids. Not only during Vacation Bible School, which is so cool. I mean, is this place incredible, the way she transforms this building? And this year, we went on a high-season voyage right here in this building. It was so cool. But Lori does a great job during the week, and most of you will probably never really get to enter into and see all the things that she does that really helps make what happens here during the week happen. You know, that's a bigger part of who we are as a family than just Sunday morning. One of the things that reflects this so well is a ministry that started up this year that Pat Posada is doing, sort of based on the reading program that we have over at the Bijou School that one of our teachers started over there, that is just, it's meeting 3 times a week and meeting with kids that need help learning one of the most basic things that most of us take for granted, and that's the ability to read. And so we have volunteers that work over there for an hour a week, 3 days a week, helping kids in the elementary school learn how to improve their reading abilities. Well, based on that, Pat Posada, who has a unique set of gifts and talents and abilities, had a desire to also help adults in the community be able to open up more opportunities via being able to write in English and also read in English. So she started a ministry here in the church that is just helping other people experience and gain the benefit of being able to read and speak more clearly in English, which it will expand their opportunities greatly. And she's got 16 people, and it's one of the, Dan and I talk about, it is one of the coolest things that happens here during this week is getting to walk through this building and see these tutors working with other adults and the relationships that they are forming as a result of that opportunity that God's afforded them. And I was just in here this week and had the privilege of having one of the men who's working with another guy, sit down over here talking and having him invite him to come to our Christmas Eve service, he and his family. And via those relationships, God has done some really beautiful things. It's easy to kind of talk about things that happen here in the building because I get to see them and I get to hear about some of the things that people are doing that are really cool. And it's neat to be able to show them up here on the screen. But, you know, at the deepest level, what the foundation of this family and the strength of our family is all about is stuff that you will never, ever see up on that screen. Because for every Pat that I get to bring to you and tell you these neat stories, and I just heard another one this week at the gym from someone in our church, is that I see and hear all the time people in this church that just purely because they love Jesus and he's central to everything that they do in their life. So every relationship, the places where they work and play are changed because they take Jesus with them wherever they go. And you know what? I will never hear and never see 95% of those stories. And that is really ultimately, and you, if you're involved in this family, you know that's true. And you know that ultimately it's fun to put the stuff here up on the screen and it's cool, but it scratches the surface of the reality of the difference that God is making in people's lives in South Lake Tahoe and wherever you go as a result of your love and your commitment to Jesus. And that is really at the core and the foundation of what makes this church such an awesome place. Another neat thing that we got to do this year is as a result of walking through that, it all belongs to God. We challenge people to read a chronological version of the Bible that lays out the events as they happened historically. And we saw, I think, 120 of them. And there are a bunch of people that are already finished. And we're going to plan a little get-together celebration for the people that made that journey sometime early this next year. We send out some really neat work teams over the last couple of years, and this year again, sending team down to Nicaragua and also out to the reservation, both kids and adult teams. Overcomers Outreach, which has met in February 2010, 20 years there's been an Overcomers Outreach group here, which is something Rex oversees also. That's for, you know, it's a group for anybody that struggles with any kind of addiction or unhealthy behavior in their life. It's a place to come, think, and talk, and explore how to overcome those things and understand how God has given us through via his grace the ability to work through those challenges. I go to Overcomers on a regular basis. You can go on Tuesday nights from 6 to 7 o'clock. They also meet on Friday mornings from 9 to 10 o'clock right over here in that little house. But that's a ministry that's been around for 25 years, and we just celebrated 20 years of having them meet at our church. I got to do more weddings this last year than I'd done all of my other years of ministry combined. And man, I got to be a part of some really beautiful ceremonies. This is just one example. This was Chris and Kelly getting married out at Sugar Pine Place over here. And Christ is so central to their lives and their stories of coming together. They did this beautiful foot washing ceremony there. And you know, it's been a privilege to see and celebrate with so many people that are building their lives, young people that are choosing to build their lives with Christ at the center of it. We got to see some really neat baptisms and participate in some of those things this year also. I cried. I promised myself I wouldn't do it this service. We said goodbye to some people that we really love over this last year, and January 2nd, we said goodbye to one of those people, Dr. Bob Andrews, and it's one of the hard things about being a part of a family is saying goodbye. And we love, you know, we said goodbye to quite a few important, special people this year in our church. And it's hard for us, and it leaves a gap here, but we're grateful that they are in glory and looking forward to all that they had built their life on. And we had the privilege to journey along with some really beautiful people that we had to say goodbye to this last year. And of course, the last 4 weeks, we've talked all about the gift of Christmas and, you know, how do we make what Jesus is and who he is not just something that we celebrate, you know, for a couple of days of the year, but how do we make that how we build and center our lives on the gift that God gave us in his son Jesus and all that he would grow and do. One of the most popular things to do this next week is to think about a New Year's resolution. Raise your hand. How many people have done a resolution at what time in their life? I actually see some people that haven't raised their hands. I don't believe it. Now let's do this. Keep your hand up if you said, yes, I've done a New Year's resolution. Raise your hand. Now, let's keep your hand up if you have failed more than once at keeping a resolution. Yeah, a little bit higher. Here is the fact of the year in terms of study, you know, people who've done studies about New Year's resolutions. Some guy, John Norcross from the University of Scranton. This is what he does studies on these sort of things. The average person makes the same New Year's resolution 10 separate times without success. Now, I know that's none of your experiences. But here's the thing that I wondered about when I saw that. I wondered how many people, I'm going to quit smoking this year. I'm going to get in shape. Whatever your New Year's resolution, I'm going to stop being sarcastic. I'm not going to go to church and listen to Noah anymore. Whatever, I hope you fail at that one. Whatever your resolution is, and you have failed, you weren't able to follow through with it. How many people ever really stop and examine? Go back and think about, well, why? I intended to be committed to seeing this through in my life, and I didn't do it for whatever reason. And I wonder how many people really ever go back and examine, you know, what led to their failure or their ability to keep that commitment. And see, here is what I get out of this study. If we did that more often and we took that seriously, learning from what we didn't do, it might not take us 10 times to learn a lesson. And how many of you would say, you know that God, there are things in your life that he's been trying to teach you, not once, not twice, not 10 times, but 30 times you've been in the same situation, and God's trying to help you learn something, and you just keep repeating and going back through the same cycle over and over and over again. And part of my basic contention is that we just don't spend enough time examining what it is God's trying to teach us and figure out where we didn't learn the first time. And part of the basic reason is because we are horrible about going back before we go forward and learning from our lessons from the past that we've experienced in life. And that's really the thing I just want to challenge you with right now. Probably a lot of you will make some kind of resolution this next year. And the one thing I would encourage you guys to do that I have found so much value in is this last week and a half is going back and looking through some of the messages that we've done up front here. Because I'm not trying to brag, but I think God has really delivered some beautiful truths, life-changing truths from up front here over this last year of 2010. And I bet you that some of you out there can think back and there was a message or you can have a pick of a couple of things that you knew God was speaking to you about from whoever was up here delivering the message that Sunday. And you may have a little bit of that residue in your mind right now, but I encourage you, before you leap into this next year, would you take time and go back and grab a hold of one thing that God has been trying to teach you this last year. And, you know, it may not be just something that was taught up here up front from the pulpit. You may have read a book that deeply impacted you and called your attention to an area of your life that you know you need to deal with, or had a relationship with someone that loves you that has been talking to you and gently persuading, cajoling you to think about. Don't go forward into this next year without spending some time examining and thinking back through and appropriating into your own life some of what God has been trying to teach you this year. This year has been amazing for us in so many ways, and one of the things that we have found again this year is the faithfulness of God demonstrated through your generosity here at this church. We know a lot of other pastors that have just had a horrible time financially in their church, and they're really not in any different position than we are as a town and as a group of people. And the things that has been significant for us compared to a lot of other people that we know is that we've had a whole lot of generous people that have really stepped up this last year and a half to help us be able to continue to do the things that we're doing here as a church that we as pastors feel passionate about. And I want to thank you for your sacrificial generosity that you have displayed that allows us to keep doing the things that God has called us to do here. And we could not do it without that. So thank you very much. It's a privilege for me to be one of your pastors here. For the last time this year, if our ushers will come forward, we will continue our worship this morning with our offering. God bless you. Have a great last couple of days of 2010.